Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network. The Best Ever You Show is here to help you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products and businesses, real life stories. With this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. And now, here is your host, Elizabeth.
Happy Sunday, everyone. Thank you for listening. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Best Ever You Show. And thank you to everyone at Blog Talk Radio for all of your support with our show. And with all of you listening and all of your sharing of this show all over the internet and social media and everywhere, we're quickly growing and coming up on about 2 million downloads and listens. It's happening fast, and I know it'll be a while to get there, but we're going to probably hit that number at some point in early 2014. So really, really exciting, and just thank you for all of your support. And one of the things that you'll notice lately is our website, besteveryou.com, has had a little bit of a revamp to it. And that's because we have a book coming out. I have a book coming out on April 14th, 2014, called Percolate, Let Your Best Self Filter Through. So we're kind of gearing up for that, getting everybody involved, and really proud to be signed with Hay House and just really excited for that book to come out. It's in pre-order mode anywhere books are sold now. It was up on Amazon, and now it's pretty much everywhere, and so things are heating up. It gets scary when you put a book out there and you wonder, is anybody actually going to buy this? Is anybody listening? It's pretty funny, and you know, more so than that, I just care that I loved the process of writing that book with my colleague, Dr. Katie Eastman. We had so much fun. It took a couple years to write it, but she did a lot of the work behind her, just making sure everything was, you know, psychologically sound, and we had some good laughs and everything. So I hope you, that more than anything, I hope that you enjoy the book and get some good use out of it. There's 9 points in it to help you percolate and be your best you. So that's what we've got going on here. It's been a really interesting summer. I know we were originally scheduled with our guest who's here with us today, Scott Chesney, on Thursday the 5th, but we moved the show because I got to tell you, I took my oldest son with to college, which I'm sure for those of you who have college-age kids, that first moment when you take a kiddo to college is really extremely just a huge mix of emotions. There's happiness, there's sadness, there's, I can't tell you, for like 3 days after I took him up there, I thought he was home because his car was in the driveway. It's really wild. So, Scott, thank you for being cool about that, and thank you for rescheduling with us today. So, with that said, Scott Chesney, hello, hello, hello. How are you?
I'm doing great, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for having me on the show. And I have to tell you, I know your book's all about percolating, but based on everything that you got going on, I think you're bubbling over now. I think you're doing more than percolating.
Isn't that fun? Well, I don't know if I am or not. You know, you never can tell, but you hope, like you do, I'm sure, you just hope that you touch a life or change a life or change somebody's day or smile or outlook or perspective or, you know, whatever it is. Do you kind of feel that way about the work that you do? And I'm going to introduce you properly in a minute, but don't you think that, you know, just, you, I know with everything you do, you just change a life.
Absolutely. I have a mantra in life to make a positive difference in the life of at least one person every day, and that's something that I really make sure happens. It could be within my own family, it could be with a neighbor, it could be someone who I've just met through a presentation or coaching. Obviously, the mind, the ego, everything else wants millions upon millions, and yeah, that's happening as well, but you know what, I really try more and more every day, Elizabeth, to simplify my life so at least one person every day helping make a positive difference in his or her life.
Yeah, that's really important. Well, here's our one for today because I get to meet you and I'm so excited. I can't wait to share your story and who you are and everything with our audience who's listening. This is, it's just really exciting, and I want to thank Jill for connecting us so that you could be here today, because you've got such a powerful story and you've changed the lives of so many. Your website is Scott Chesney. Is it scottchesney.com? Is that where you would like people to go?
Correct.
Okay, so yes. As we're listening here, as you hear all about Scott, if you want to learn more about him after the show or during the show, you can go to scottchesney.com. Are you also on Twitter?
Absolutely. At Scott Chesney.
Same thing. Scott Chesney. Okay, good. So there's two ways that you can get a hold of him. And then on our actual show, we have a chat room going. So if you have any questions, you can ask us or you can call us at 714-868-0220 and ask a question. So that's what we've got going on as far as getting in touch with Scott. But Scott, you were paralyzed at a very young age. Can you tell, just so we start right from there, can you tell us what happened to you and just a little bit more about that journey to where you are today?
Absolutely. Well, for the first 15 years of my life, Elizabeth, my life was all about movement. Football, basketball, baseball. It was even difficult to get me to sit down and read a book in school. And then on December 28, 1985, I was 15 years old. I was a sophomore at Verona High School in New Jersey, and I woke up the morning after a high school basketball game, and I couldn't feel my left toe. Like when your foot falls asleep or a part of your body falls asleep, those pins and needles. Thought nothing of it. 48 hours later, that numbness went up one leg, went up a second leg, and left me paralyzed, unable to move and feel normally from about my belly button down to my toes. There was no accident, no injury, no trauma. With doctors, after tests and two different hospitals and exploratory surgery determined is that I was born with a malformation of blood vessels lodged in my spinal cord, and I could have gone my entire life without anything happening, but it was like a sleeping volcano. So at that moment in 1985, blood vessels burst and bled and almost created what they call like a stroke. It's an arterial venous malformation, an AVM for any medical people out there. And it was just my time. The blood vessel burst, put pressure on the cord, and again, left me paralyzed, which is very, very rare. It was rare then. It is rare today. Most paralysis victims or spinal cord injuries occur as a result of some type of accident or injury. But there are illnesses, there are diseases, and either those that people are born with or those that people acquire at some time in their lives that paralyze them. And it just happened to be my time. So for the last 28 years, I've had to live my life to the fullest from a mm-hmm. wheelchair. And that's where life is today.
Was there ever, well, I'm sure there have been many points, but, you know, you're 15 years old, were you like, what the heck just happened? And, you know, why? And were there ever just moments where you just completely pissed at the world for this happening to you?
But what's interesting is that you would think, based on where I was, and the only thing that I had my sights on before I was paralyzed, Elizabeth, was playing college basketball or playing college football. Either one of those two were going to happen. My dream was to go to University of North Carolina and play for the Tar Heels. If that didn't happen, I was going to play quarterback for the University of Oklahoma Sooners football team. That's all I had my sights set on. So you would think I had every right to be angry, every right to be upset, to be sad, to be depressed, but it took me a number of years for this to hit me. And I realize why now, and it took me a number of years of self-discovery and so forth, is that obviously we all as individuals have different ways of dealing with things, different ways of allowing grief to enter our lives and how we manage that. What I ended up doing many years after I became paralyzed, Elizabeth, is that I rewound the tape of my life. I took myself back. You can take yourself back to any moment in your life, and you can't change it. But you can understand what's happened and possibly reinterpret it. I just remember laying in that hospital bed and seeing golf ball-shaped eyes with tears in them, whether beginning with my parents, my brother, family, and friends. And I just know that that 15-year-old kid made a decision to say, all that pain that you guys are experiencing out there is far greater than I could be experiencing myself. So I know that I shut it down. Everything that I had, every right to feel, Elizabeth, anger, frustration, depression, whatever it may be, I said, that pain that you all are experiencing is far greater than I can experience. So I almost like went the opposite way and said, I need to be an inspiration. I need to be motivation because I can't handle that pain that I'm feeling from every set of eyes and every heart that's coming to visit me.
Hmm. Do you ever think, you know, this might stretch into like more spiritual and things like that, but you know how some people say, well, this has happened to me for a reason.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you ever think
absolutely.
Like that?
I absolutely feel that way. I feel that You know, and it's going to sound very strange maybe to many of your listeners.
Yeah.
I didn't consciously say that, you know, I need to go out there and paralyze myself because I'm afraid of different things. But, you know, what's interesting is that everything at that point in my life that I equated with being a man is that, like, for whatever reason, it just was not appealing to me. Not that I wanted to be a woman, but in terms of all this stuff, And the pressure, and you think about it, as a 15-year-old kid, I'm getting ready to step into my manhood. Everything that I associate with being a man just scared me. It frightened me. It wasn't so appealing. So, you know what? We talk so much about being able to heal illnesses and cure ourselves from time to time. I also believe that we can create illness. We can create disease. We can create disability. And wow, it's a terrible thing right away that kind of stopped me at that moment from having to go that natural course of stepping into my manhood. And in many ways, it protected me. And I know that it's sad and it's scary and it's what an awful road and path to take. But you know what? That's the journey that I know on some level. You know, I get to that point, Elizabeth, where if I'm not looking to prove something to someone, then I know it to be my truth. And that's what the story that I put together through my journey of self-discovery many years after my paralysis that just resonated with me, and it felt right. But I also know just as I manifested, created paralysis, I truly believe that once the messages and lessons are taken away from this paralyzing experience, I can rise and walk away from this wheelchair as well.
Do you And I've got so many questions. I'm going to have to write them all down because my brain is going about 1,000 miles an hour with all these things I want to ask you. But
That's a lot to digest. You know, some of your listeners are like, wow, does this guy have a mental disability too? No, it's, you know what? It's an awakening.
Yeah.
And I would have never had I opened myself up to whether it be alternative medicines and different self-development and ways of thinking, I would have never resonated with this. I probably would have been like, you know what, it was just something that happened, unfortunately, and I have to deal with it. You know, life to me today, Elizabeth, it's not about surviving. There's things that I need to do to care for myself on a daily basis to survive. I determined many, many years ago that, you know what, yeah, I have a disability, yeah, I have limitations, but you know what, I'm ready to thrive in the face of adversity. And you can't.
Well,
it's not just about surviving. It's about thriving. And that's where I am today.
Yeah, I have, with my food allergies, I have another website that I do as much as I can do. It's called Food Allergy Zone. And I call it Alive and Thrive with Food Allergies because I'm a food allergy survivor. I've nearly lost my life many times, but just on two particular occasions, really way too close to death to even talk about almost. But, you know, I get the Alive and Thrive thing. And what I want everybody to know is, okay, so this happened to you. And since you've become a nationally and internationally recognized workshop and keynote presenter, and you've, like, people like Fortune 500 corporations hire you, hospitals, rehab centers, sports teams. I saw this picture of you, maybe talk about it right now, but you were in front of a sports team. Talking to people, and you're the Pentagon. I mean, people love your message. Can you tell us a little bit about how you went from, like, being age 15 and paralyzed to that journey of saying, okay, I'm going to overcome this, and I'm not only going to overcome it, but I'm going to, what I call, percolate peace out into the world and change other people's lives?
Absolutely. It was a short time after my father had passed away when I was now 24 years old, which would have meant 9 years after I was paralyzed, and just in a place of, you know, who am I? What do I want to do with my life? And I ended up moving out of New Jersey. I moved down to Miami, Florida. It was the first time ever that I was living on my own. And down there, it was just, again, going through the motions, had a great job working for Miami Project, the Bonacani Fund to Cure Paralysis, doing a lot of speaking. That's where my speaking began, sharing my own story a little bit and talking about the research down there. But there was something bigger that was waiting for me, and I wasn't quite sure. And then an incredible individual who's like a second father to me, someone who's taken so much time to get to know himself that he understands and can relate to others like beautifully. But my most incredible mentor in the world, he gave me the opportunity to travel around the world. And it wasn't like, hey, you know what, your father's passed away. I don't think he ever grieved over your paralysis and you need to take the trip. This trip. If he had said that to me, I would have said, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. But the way he put it, like, how would you like to take a trip around the world? All expenses paid, leave whenever you want, come back whenever you want. Maybe research some alternative medicines to help your situation and others with paralysis. And it was just, and Elizabeth, I had never at that point in my life had any desire to travel outside the United States. I had traveled extensively through my work, but no desire to go overseas. But it's like he was speaking to something much deeper to the point where I said, yeah, and left, went to 15 countries in 15 months. And just this journey of self-discovery was developing before my very eyes. And then a second trip that I was able to create with all these corporations who had me speak, who said, you've learned so much, you should take this journey back around the world. So wasn't quite sure how I wanted my business to form yet. I said, okay, and went back to these corporations, raised the money that I needed to go, and together with my wonderful wife, we went to 26 countries in 1 year. And that's where the whole platform for speaking about transformation, talking about overcoming adversity, work-life balance, and just really helping people get from where they are today to where they want to be. I'm part of that bridge. You got to build the bridge yourself. You got to cross the bridge yourself. But you know what? We all need a little facilitation. We all need a little motivation, inspiration. And that's what I try to add to people's lives. So it was through my own experience, through my own trials and tribulations, that this whole speaking platform was created. That is just, it's connecting with so many people now. I mean, just to let you know, I did a webinar for my local school district. The entire school district of Verona, New Jersey, asked me, and I ended up doing a webinar for them. I couldn't make it there in person. The following day, I'm on with a group of kids through this Griffin Bridges program that takes kids from like inner cities who have so much intelligence, so much talent, but yet don't have the financial means, who are now at Seton Hall Prep, and they have this unbelievable mentoring program that's a part of it. And I'm speaking there. I have Prudential Financial coming up. I have MDOL coming up. So the phone just keeps ringing. I never know who's calling me, but I know right away what gear to shift into to really customize and cultivate that message that can, again, best help people to move forward. Because, you know what, so many people say, Stat, you're such a motivator, such a inspirational person. And I love that, but you know what? Motivation can be here in a moment and gone in the next. Inspiration to be here in the moment to be gone in the next. And yes, we can build it as we go along, but what I really try to do more than ever with every presentation, every coaching client, is to really help to take my message and translate that into positive action. Because if it doesn't, guess what? I may be here today and gone tomorrow in your heart, in your mind. They need to be positive and realistic and tangible action steps that people can take to enhance their lives personally and or professionally.
Yeah, that's so important. It seems like our world is craving that right now. Just how do I focus my energy? How am I positive? How can I transform? And it doesn't mean necessarily, a lot of times people equate transformation with like some dramatic weight loss. I'm sure that's part of it. But we're also talking about when something changes in your life, or if you want to make change, or you know, a transformation could be quitting a job and following your dream to be a painter, or you know, transformation is whatever you make it to be. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, you're absolutely right, Elizabeth. Is that it could be a baby step or it could be a giant leap, but so much we think that it requires. So many details, and it's a long, arduous process. And you know what? Sometimes it is, but sometimes, you know what? It could just be like exchanging a smile to a complete stranger and knowing full well what that did for someone, or helping out a neighbor with something, doing some type of volunteer work. Is that it could be little things, it could be big things. And I think that's what makes life interesting, is that sense of variety, is that we don't necessarily know how it's going to happen, and we don't need to know, but we see it unfolding through our very eyes, and there's this mysterious element which we so much want to, like, put a stamp on and say, I need to fully understand this. I need to, like, control this situation, whereas it's not about that. It's about, which is so tough, it's about embracing uncertainty, which is so challenging and so difficult. Mm-hmm. And it's about, which is huge, it's about letting go. It's about letting go. So many times people say to me, well, I have expectations. I have expectations, in which I say, well, expectations are basically an indirect way of trying to control something or trying to control another person. And they said, well, how do I get what I want then? How do I either get this person to act the way I want to, or how do I have this outcome that I desire? Yeah, well, we said, you know what? No, intention. Intention is just as powerful as an expectation, but the difference is a letting go and a detachment of the outcome, meaning you're going to do everything in your power to make this happen this way, but at some point you are going to let go, and whatever it is the outcome is, you're going to know that's what's in your best interest and those involved. It's like I always explain to you, when you go, let's on a very simple level, you go to you have a plant and you're given a seed. Now, you do everything in your power to make sure you put that seed in the ground and you put some fertilizer in there and you water it. Maybe it requires light, and you take all those steps. Now, is it every day, every moment of the day that you're shoveling this and looking to see if the seed grows? No, you'll kill the plant if you do that. There's a part of you that lets go. You check in on it once in a while, but there's a part of you that lets go and lets that seed do what it needs to do to grow. And I think it's a great example, like, to really apply to our lives, and it's tough. Well, I'm not saying that it's easy. It's tough.
Well, when you were talking about that, what came to my mind for me was dropping my son off at college.
Yeah, that was a big letting go.
Oh, my gosh. I can't tell you. That is the strangest feeling. This was my baby, my first baby, and I palled around with him our whole entire, I cannot tell you how it's a giant strange feeling to not have him here every day. It's just really bizarre, and part of me wants to do that, but the reasonable part of me is like, I am so proud of that kid. It's so cool, because it's hard to go to college, it's hard to be away from your parents, it's hard to get good grades, it's hard to focus your energy on that. And it's fun, and it's, there's a whole bunch of different things. But, just that little thing is like, you planted a little seed, and there it's blooming, but you can't control it. And you couldn't control
Absolutely.
Him when he was here. I have four kids, and you can't control them. They're all different. And you can foster
four
them
kids?
Along, point them in the right direction.
We got to change the name of your book. Four kids doing everything that you're doing. I want to say you are boiling. I mean, the percolating just seems a little weak right now. I think you are boiling. On fire. That's the new name of Elizabeth.
On
Brown.
Fire.
On
fire.
I should ask, what don't you do? What don't you do? Four kids. Didn't you?
Oh,
they're
so cool.
Somewhere.
They're
I can't imagine that, Elizabeth. I have two kids, one for each hand. And, I have a daughter who's 10 going on about 15. And
yep.
My son, who's like opposite, I can never imagine being outnumbered, my wife and me. I can't imagine it.
Yeah, we're definitely outnumbered, but it's so much fun. And two kids, four kids, they're precious people, and it's so cool to see their interests. I am fascinated by what they're in. They're all four very different kids. I'm sure you have two different kids as well. And isn't it cool to it's hard to explain, but you just step back from them almost and see what they're interested in, and then help them develop what they're interested in, instead of
it's
forcing them to be what you're interested in.
Absolutely, absolutely. I am comparing, and I mean this in the most heartfelt, loving way, is that my parenting experience so far, and even before I became a parent, I was doing parenting workshops, and people are like, well, you're not even a parent. How can you do this? And I said, well, it's about connection. It's about connection. It's not necessarily about parenting, because guess what? My hometown of Verona, you need a card to take out a library book. You need a license to go fishing in our local lake. You need a license to get to drive a car. And I said, you know what you need to be a parent? Absolutely nothing. They will send anybody home with a child. It's actually quite scary. So we're kind of making this up as we go along and doing the best job that we can. But what I'm finding out more than anything, and this is why I love being a dad, and because I'm so into self-growth and self-development, is that I truly believe our greatest button pushers are our greatest teachers. And right now, my children, who I love dearly, are my greatest button pushers, and they drive me up a wall, but I love them because I'm learning so much about myself and so much about others, so much about life that I wouldn't have it any other way.
That's a really good, that's good wisdom right there. Great button pushers. I'm going to have to quote you on that and tweet that out. That's really funny. They sure are. They call you on the carpet, don't they, when they, funny.
It's amazing. Your stuff just comes right to the forefront, and we can either reject it or whatever. We can say, wow, it's playing out right before my very eyes. Let me learn a little bit. Again, I should say this 10 times during your program. It's not easy. But just because it's not easy doesn't mean it doesn't have to be fun. It is fun. It is enjoyable. It is nerve-wracking. You explode. But I'm telling you, it is never dull. It is never dull.
Nope, it's not. And it's interesting because it's not. Sometimes parents think, like, I'm in charge, you listen to me, you're going to do what I say, you're going to, you know, follow, you know, all this stuff, and there's that authoritative kind of parent. And then there's, I think, I kind of tend to be more, you know, of course I have rules and things like that, and they're kind of, they're pretty respectful, they're loose but serious rules, you know, that kind of thing. And, but the part that's fun is, to just really, I mean, just real, like we've got a baseball player, we've got one that wants to be a meteorologist, we've got one that wants to go to Stanford, and we've got one that's super involved with fitness for very different children. And so it calls your expertise into motion. It's like, you want to be a meteorologist, huh? Like, wow, where do we go to school for that? What do we do? It's just, they're just so fascinating. And how they arrived at what they want to do, or what they think they want to do, or what they're interested in. It's just, I'm fascinated by kids all around. I just
absolutely
think it's so cool.
It just
and they
expands.
Know.
They expand their life. And sometimes, guess what? Sometimes our children follow in the footsteps of us, and they just happen to have the same interest that we have, and it makes it sometimes a little bit easier, and we're like, that's my child and everything. But you know what? There are other times when exactly what you're sharing is that, you know what, they're just really going off in a total different direction. And what I feel, see, everything that you're sharing, Elizabeth, tells me, you know what, Elizabeth has got such a solid foundation within herself because she's so accepting and tolerating. Even if she doesn't know what this is all about, hey, you know what, where do we go to school for this? Whereas there's a lot of people, not to be in judgment, who haven't done the necessary work on themselves, who can't get out of their own way, who are the ones, let's say, who are out on the field basically playing the sport for their child, or they can't get out of their way and are preventing their child from having the experience, which is, I'm just like, just sit back. And, you know, I had, my son is in, he was into karate. And I just like, you're coming, I can't even kick. I mean, and he's doing karate and I'm loving it. And then guess what? He doesn't like karate anymore. That's fine. My daughter picks up like the violin, starts playing the violin. And then it's the saxophone. And then it's they're doing track, and they're doing cross. I mean, all these things that I never did, and just it's amazing. You know what was funny is that I'm trying to remember how old he was at the time. I think my son, who's now 8 years old, must have been around like 4 years of age, and he was into dinosaurs, loved dinosaurs. Now, when I was growing up, it was only like Godzilla and King Kong. I didn't know anything about dinosaurs outside of that. It just wasn't something that interested me. He knew basically the name of a dinosaur for every letter of the alphabet. And one day he came up to me out of nowhere, Elizabeth. Out of nowhere he came up to me and he said, Dad, and this was such a building and a teaching moment and a credibility moment. He looked me right in the eyes and he said, Dad, what can you tell me about a Velociraptor? and I can't even remember the name. And I looked at him right in the eye, and I said, you know what? I can make something up right now and sound important. I know he'll buy into it, or he will never ask me another question again if he doesn't. But I looked him right in the eye, and I said, you know what, Ray? I don't have a clue. But you know what? Let's find out together. And all of a sudden, a big smile overcame his face, and he goes, hey, Doug, let's Google it. So we Googled it, and we found out all about it. But it's like I love to tell parents, and I love to tell people, especially kids, is that, you know what, I don't that moment, when that moment comes, Elizabeth, when I have all the answers, you know what you do is that you dig this big ditch, you put me in it, you cover me with dirt. There's no reason to be alive anymore. And even if that learning comes from, like, at that moment, a 4 or 5 year old kid, awesome. I don't have to know everything. I don't want to know anything. I want to be on this journey with them and learn together.
Yep. You've got that same dinosaur kid, kind of the same thing, but the one that got me, I knew I loved dinosaurs when I was a kid, so I was somewhat okay on that one until we got into, like, every name of every dinosaur. I'm like, never heard of that one, you know, kind of thing. the kiddo that got me was, okay, so we're talking about kids a lot on this show, so it's fun, he was 7 at the time, super into all of the planets, right? So I'm like, oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Sorry for everybody, but I'm not the planet whiz and the astronomy girl. I'm just not, I don't know, I never really studied it or paid too much attention in college, so or high school or elementary school, so I got to look it up and all this stuff. So he wants his room decorated in the planets, right? So I go easy on the glow stars. I've got some curtains that have planets on them, and he has Googled these planets that he wants to, like, paste and stick up on the wall in order of how far they are away from us and the sun, everything. And I'm like, oh, no. You know that sixth-grade science project or fourth-grade science project where you had to do the styrofoam balls on the sticks and move them all around? I mean, I did not do well on that. Anyway, he's like, no, Mom, you've got it all wrong. That planet goes over there. Don't you know that? Kind of thing.
I love it.
But, you know, we had to get the computer out and make sure everything was, you know, on the wall accurately. You know, you don't want to put the planets out of order, for crying out loud, that are permanently wallpapered to the wall. But isn't that funny, though, that they're just, I don't know, they're little explorers.
Absolutely. They're innocent. There's such a purity. There's such an innocence that, you know what, we as adults, need to bring back into our lives in general, and I'm generalizing here, but it's that innocence, it's on that level of being fearless. I just heard something this morning with Dr. Sanjay Gupta from CNN, and he said, do something scary each and every day, something that scares you each and every day. And it's like, I just love that. I resonated with that because it's like, you know what, that's pushing our comfort zone. And that little kid, that's what I love about it, is that little kid, he falls down, he bumps his elbow, and it's like the end of the world for those few moments. And he's crying, and the tears is like he's got boogies coming all over the place. But then all of a sudden, there's a little butterfly, and the next moment it floats by. The tears are gone, the boogies are gone, and all of a sudden, wow, look at that butterfly. Yeah, but the kid's so much in the moment. And it's just like there's a fearlessness, there's an innocence, there's a moment-to-moment thing that, yeah, you know what, maybe we can't be like that all the time as adults, but you know what, it would be fun to be like that more than we actually are on a day-to-day basis. So, again, what we're sharing is that there's stuff that obviously children are meant to be learning from us, but there's so much that we're supposed to be learning from them and allow that learning to come forward for us as adults.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to really pay attention to kids and listen to them and what they say. And I love that because I think as an adult we get really serious. You know, everything's got to be serious. And I question that a lot. You know, does it really have to be? I don't know. I spend a lot of my day laughing, a lot of my day in humor, and a lot of my day more in courage than fear and doing new things and trying to bring out that little kid in me. I even have crayons. I mean, I love crayons.
Nice.
My calendar is seldom in pen or pencil. It's in crayon. People hate that. It's in marker or colored pens or something. I mean, you literally are in purple crayon on my calendar for Sunday. I mean that seriously.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and I couldn't erase you. I had to, like, it was in crayon.
I didn't know I was the purple type, but that's good. Okay.
But, you know, I think what you said there is so important. But, you know, to bring a little bit of that kid-like place into adulthood, is that anything that you talk about with people in some of these speeches
absolutely.
That you're giving?
Because, you know, you're absolutely right when you mentioned that we're generalizing here, but we're very serious people. And I think that, you know, there's two voices inside of us. One's inside our head and one's inside our heart. And I think that there are too many adults today who are living their lives from their head, in which I say when you're living life from your head, it's about fear, disbelief, playing small in life. It's like the mind wants to be in control, and that's the only place where fear resides. Whereas when the other voice that we have is inside our heart. And when you're living from your heart, it's about courage, expansion, subscribing to that notion, that belief that anything is possible. And when you're there and you're living life from your heart, then your mind comes along for the ride. Then your head comes along for the ride and serves you in the form of creativity and imagination. So, again, talking about that kid, he's in his heart. He's right there in the moment. He's there. It's a reason why it's like beating and we can feel it. It's there in the moment. And somewhere along the line, I'm very curious, Elizabeth, to find out where this shift takes place. It's somewhere in adolescence in which, whether it's being told too many times not to do this or fear is instilled, whatever it may be, is that all of a sudden we start living more from our heads and not so much in our hearts. But you know what? I make such a conscious effort more every day to live my life from my heart because I know that whether it be transitioning when I was 15 years old and became paralyzed, whether it was the journeys that I've been on, whether it's being like having that courage to become a father, all these wonderful things to start my business, is that I know that there's been so many moments of courage. And I know when we get into times of adversity as well, is that, yes, there's times for us to get into our hearts and to really tap into that courage. But I'm like, you know what? I want to live there on a daily basis. I just don't want to go there when times are tough. I want to live my life to the fullest. And I know based on the limitations of our minds, because that's, again, where fear resides. And fear, it's such an amazing thing. It's natural. Fear is so natural. But you know what? When we allow it to control ourselves, when we are living our lives from our head, then it controls us so much. But guess what? The fear that we create in our lives emotionally is more paralyzing than any type of physical paralysis I might be living with. And I know that all too well through my experience and through people that I've worked with. Whereas, you know what, with fear is that, you know what, when we leverage it, it's tremendous energy, and it will always be there. I'm nervous every time before I speak. Every time before I do a speaking engagement, no matter how well I'm prepared, there's always that sense of nervousness, and that's fine. I share with people, and I know it's hard to relate in this day and age because we have GPSs and everything to get us away, but there used to be a time when we didn't have GPS, and whether it be late at night, all of a sudden we got lost. And whether it was like a gas station or something, we couldn't find it. It's not so much that we let fear, like, oh, it got me, and I'm just going to park the car here and just hope someone finds me. No, your eyes, no matter how tired you were, got really wide. There was a part of you that looked at, there was a heightened alertness to say, I got to get my butt out of here and find out where I am. And that's the same thing in life now, is that when we leverage fear and allow it to become tremendous energy, it is an amazing adrenaline rush. It is amazing fuel that can carry us in and out of any situation.
Do you think living with your heart means dropping everything and going for it?
Well, no. I mean, it's good to do some play. I like being spontaneous. I like being in the moment, but I believe in taking calculated risks. I believe in terms of planning some things, but I also know through experience of my own, but also the experience of others with whom I've worked, is that any decision based in fear is always going to be a decision in which you're going to have some tremendous lessons to learn. And sometimes that comes in the form of pain. Sometimes that comes in the form of loss. Sometimes that comes in the form of tremendous adversity. I talk a lot about karma. I'm a believer in karma. Is that decisions based in fear, you build up a lot of karma. And whether it be karmic debts that you're going to have to repay. I don't know when. I don't know how much. That's your journey. I don't know exactly how much, but I've seen this all too much with decisions based in fear. Now, mind you, I have a great fear of tackling school buses, especially when they're moving. That's okay. That's okay. But you know in your heart, when you have decided, you've made a decision, you've exhausted your greatest power as a human being, your power to choose not to do something. And you know what? You have to ask yourself if this was done because of fear and how great the fear really is, in which I tell people, exhaust the fear. And they're like, oh, okay, how do we do that? It's like, what's the worst case scenario? If I'm like wanting to like be in a relationship or something, what is the worst case scenario if I go up and talk to this man or talk to this woman? What's the worst case scenario? In which people are like, well, the person doesn't want to talk to me. And guess what? You're right back where you started, but yet with someone who you know you're not supposed to be in their life. So you move on to the next person. But so many times we get so caught up in this fear that we don't take those necessary steps. And we don't have those experiences.
Well, caught up in the drama of like why. So like if I kind of believe that people are in my life and I'm in theirs for a reason. I believe very much so that you meet people for a reason. And I think
absolutely.
When you're even, I think it goes as far as even in the, I pay attention in the grocery store even to who's in front of me and who's in back of me. Because I think they're near me for a reason. And the person checking me out and the person bagging the groceries and everything. I mean, I always do that. Whenever I go to the grocery store, I pay very close attention because sometimes, you know, you can look at the person in back of you and tell sometimes whether they're in a good mood, a bad mood, you know, and just maybe a gentle smile changes somebody's whole entire day. The other day I was going to baseball with my son, and there was this man. I was standing in the line paying. I had to go inside because something wasn't working in it. So I went inside to pay for gas, and there was this guy totally emptying his pockets on the counter to try and get enough money to pay for his gas that he had just pumped. And I said, I got it, you know, and he looked at me like, really? And I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Go put 10 more bucks in too. You know, and I think that you encounter people for a reason. I don't know why, but I just strongly like that.
But you're in a place with yourself. I mean, a lot of people, when you were talking about, you know, I'm thinking about the person in front of me. I'm thinking about the person behind me. Someone's going to say, you know, Elizabeth is obsessive compulsive. No. That's not where you are. There are people like that too, but
No, not like that.
I can tell. No, I know you're not like that. You're there and you're picking up on people's energies. You're so much in the moment that you are basically on heightened alert and awareness as to what's around you, which is phenomenal. That tells me that you've done a lot of work on yourself. And that's amazing because in that moment, there is so much to be learned. I mean, I'm in a place now, Elizabeth, when someone mentions a book and then someone else mentions the book again, and like two times, sometimes you'll have me, but then when it's the third person, it's like, I got to get me that book right now because this wonderful universe can't be sending me any more signs as to what I need to be doing here and now. And the only way, because this is happening all around us all the time, not just with books, but people we're supposed to be meeting who can help us with our business, people that can help us in our personal lives, is that if we're not in the moment, the great quote I love is like, the past is history, the future is a mystery, and the moment is the gift of the present, is that we can't change the past. All we can do is go back and reinterpret it. That's the only thing that we can do and learn from it. But how many people today are dwelling on, you know, what I should have done and this should have happened and just dwelling on that, whereas you have no control over that. And then on the flip side, some people are so preoccupied with the future, whereas, you know, planning for the future, it's great. But you know what? It's like a weatherman. You can only really predict it. You have no control over it entirely.
No.
So what you need to have is you need to have such present moment awareness. And that comes with, again, exactly what you're sharing right now, whether it be in the grocery store or wherever, is to have an understanding of your surroundings and have that heightened awareness and be so alert, because not only are you in a place to be able to help others, which I believe is our purpose in life, but you're there and able to learn more about yourself and grow as well. It's actually, it gets to the point, and I know you feel the same way, Elizabeth, is that I can't wait to see where my next experience is going to come. Whether it's that person out on the corner who doesn't know when the next meal is coming, or that Fortune 500 CEO who I just met, and anyone in between. It doesn't matter. That person has been plugged into your life at that precise moment for a reason. And while you might say, wow, you know what, there's no reason to do anything because everything is just like predestined. No, that's not what I'm saying. Is that through your power to choose, through your will to do certain things, that's going to propel you into different directions. And sometimes it's going to propel you into down a path that, guess what, is going to be challenging for you, and there's going to be lessons that have to be learned. And then there are going to be other times where you're going to go down a path and everything seems to be firing on all cylinders and life seems to be working out so well. Mm-hmm. And just being aware to know, you know what, where am I? And understanding, you know what, where do I want to go? What's propelling me in this direction? And that's where your heart gets back involved. That's where our passion for life. And then I tell people, I'm not sure, where are you based, Elizabeth?
I'm in Maine. I'm in Portland, Maine.
You're in Maine? I love Maine. Do you have White Castles up in Maine?
No, that's my former Minnesota life. You have to go back
to Minnesota for White Castles.
They have them in New Jersey.
You can get them in grocery stores, too.
I tell people
I have like a passion for White Castle hamburgers to the point where I could be driving. It could even be to a speaking engagement. All of a sudden I see a White Castle, and I don't even like turn the steering wheel. The car just seems to navigate over to that White Castle hamburger. When you're passionate about something, when your heart is thumping and beating for something, that's this wonderful world telling you, you need more of this in your life. And just to observe and to adhere to that and to almost like surrender to say, yeah, I need that. I need that in my life. And to do whatever you can to integrate more of it into your life. I don't know if Castle Hamburgers was a great example. I do eat healthy, but, you know, that's one of my passions.
You're good with it. We're okay with White Castle. I know exactly what you mean. That's a good tasty snack every once in a while. They, you know, I think one of the things too that we haven't touched on yet, and that's about how you have the ability also to change your path and change your course and change your direction. And you know, for example, I think of, you know, being around. Like, let's say we're in a family and everybody is, this is exaggerating and generalizing and everything, but let's say everybody's 100 pounds overweight and you don't want to be overweight anymore. You can have, you have the power of yourself to change, maybe.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't have to be that example.
No. That's a great example, actually. I have scoured this world. Again, I've been to 38 countries, been around the world twice. There are a lot of places I haven't been. But I've scoured the world looking for answers as to what makes us tick as human beings. And I realize in terms of making changes, why some people do and some people don't, that I think there's one common denominator. And I need to really, and I'm sure he learned it from someone else, is that Tony Robbins has been one of my greatest teachers. Mm-hmm. He actually held my legs when I did a firewalk when we were in Hawaii. Went over burning hot coals. He held my legs. I did it on my hands. It was amazing. But he basically, it was the first I learned about it, is that when we link enough pain to the situation, we will make a change. Is that when we experience enough pain, we will make a change. It's like if you had your hand on an oven, I turn that oven on high. Sooner or later, you would remove your hand. That's physical pain. We all understand that. But the same holds true for emotional and mental pain, too. So it's almost like, what is it that you want to change? You talk about that 100-year-old woman. Is that? I'm sorry, the woman who's 100 pounds overweight. Is that, you know what? Those would be my questions. Not to judge her. How long has it been that you wanted to lose this weight? And sometimes just someone reflecting on how long it's been, that will help them to make a change. For other people, you have a greater threshold for pain. So it's okay, see yourself 6 months from now still carrying this excess weight, a year from now. And at some point, we all have a threshold for pain where we say, Elizabeth, enough is enough. And when we hit that threshold for pain and say enough is enough, all of a sudden we find creative ways that can help us at least to try, to attempt, to make our best effort to change our situations. I'm not saying that it always happens, but I also realize this, even with my paralysis right now, whatever it is that's going on in our life, there's a cost and there's a payoff. For it to be going on in your life, no matter what it is in this moment, for me, I just bring up paralysis, is that linked up in my wonderful mind, is that there are more payoffs to paralysis than there are costs. Because I'm a true believer that if I had more costs linked up inside my heart, inside my head, is that there would be a way of getting out of this wheelchair right now. I know that that sounds really, really far and out there, but I have seen this so much, not only with illnesses, I have seen this with businesses, I have seen this with relationships, is that but a lot of the times when we say, well, I want to make a change. I want to change my situation. This is what's costing me. And a lot of people say, and I said, yeah, I understand that, but how is being in your current situation serving you? What? I told you I understand how you want to make this change, but how is it serving you? And you have to say to yourself in a healthier, more beneficial way, when I make this change, not if, when I make this change, this is how I'll have all these payoffs still being met, but in a much healthier, beneficial way.
You know, I really love that. That's a really, you know, we think a lot about, you know, what it is that triggers the change. And I completely agree with you. You know, there's just like a threshold. You get to the point where you're like, okay, no more, or I always say no more, or enough is enough. What do you think about backing that up even though, and maybe helping people not even have to get to that point before they have to make a change? For example, I think of people who let's just go with the weight again, because we're talking about that. Like, so let's say you're 150 pounds overweight, and now on top of it, unfortunately, you have a heart attack. Sometimes that doesn't even appear to be the threshold at which people change.
Oh, absolutely, because again, there's so many underlying reasons as to what this weight is doing for you. You might say, well, what would carrying excess weight, I mean, how is that serving you? I mean, for some people, it allows them to isolate themselves. They don't go out, they don't socialize. It allows them to basically not be accountable for in terms of their weight. Some people feel like very deserving based on other things that have gone in your life. I need to carry this excess weight. I need to have all this and so forth. So again, it's not to judge anyone who's carrying excess weight. And if you're in a place where you're happy and you're content and you want to be that way, that's fine. Who am I to judge you? Yet if you're in a place of realizing, hey, you know what, I'm not going to be around here as long as I would like to because, you know what, this excess weight is really not helping me from a health standpoint and everything, is that's when you're going to want to make a change. So that's where it's really going deep down inside and understanding how this is serving me, how could carrying excess weight serve me, but to also begin to focus on that picture, not if, but when I lose this weight, what life's going to be all about. And that's also a scary picture. And again, I've never had the weight issue before. I've worked with a lot of people with weight issues, but I look at it with regards to my paralysis. People might say, Scott, wouldn't that be awesome to walk again, even though it's been 28 years? And I think about it, and there's one side of me, honestly, that says, you know what, yeah, this would be amazing. And I have this vision of myself being up on stage, this awesome music pumping, and all you see is a silhouette of me sitting in that wheelchair. You see the side profile of me sitting on the stage with a silhouette, just a spotlight on me. And all of a sudden, almost like the evolution of man, I stand up out of my chair, and I walk away from my wheelchair, and I come flying through
You kind of do that already, I got to tell you.
That's powerful. That's a powerful vision that I have, but it's so powerful that I get tingly, like, wow, it's too much power. Whereas, I mean, there's some things that I think about that, you know what, you know, there's more to be learned. Maybe I'm not so ready to walk in. I feel such a comfort
zone. I think you're already running. I got to tell you, just from listening to you, I think you're, you know, marathoning down the street. Yeah, I think you're already running. You think I'm on fire while I think you're running. So
I will say this real quick, is that I also know that I am so frightened and I am so scared to to walk again. And you know what? That's okay. So if it's that person who's out there who's 100 pounds overweight, 150 pounds overweight, who says, I want to do so much to lose this weight, I believe you. And also, if you're there and I am so scared and so forth because what's life going to be like for me when I lose this weight, and you're scared about that as well, guess what? I'm right there with you, and I understand. There's fear on the other side, but as we talked about before, leverage that fear. It's tremendous energy that will head you in the right direction as to where you want to be.
Courage, yeah, it'll change your life. Do you let me ask you a little bit about walking. Let me check time here. We're going on and on and on here. We have I might let this conversation go five more minutes. Can I? Do you mind if we go five over?
Absolutely.
Or do you have to go
absolutely.
Right away? Okay. I might let it go for a little bit here.
We have New Jersey stretchable time, so we're never on time here.
I get you. I hear you. Maine, it's so calm here, and there's no traffic, so we tend to be on time, but I'm letting it go. I wanted to share this story with you about my friend Karen Falk. And I don't know if you've ever met her before, and if you haven't, maybe I could introduce you after the show.
I would love it.
Yeah, she's so awesome. She and my spouse, formerly known as Michael, I don't call him Max. they worked together, and they were driving in, I believe it was Texas, and they were in this SUV heading to work, and a car driving, I don't know how many miles an hour or whatever, but anyway, they got in a car accident. A car completely sideswiped them, and he had moved from, I think, the front seat to the back seat or something like that, and nothing really happened too much to him. But she, however, was ejected from the car and paralyzed in that one moment. Going to work, just do-do-do-do-do, and boom, you know, paralyzed. And so she lives her life in a wheelchair as well, and she's rocking it. I mean, she is so cool. I love you, Karen, if you're listening to the show. She is so amazing. She's an executive at Merrill Corporation in St. Paul, Minnesota. I put her story in Percolate, and I love her. Can you talk about that feeling? And I know you've gone through this where one minute you're fine and the next minute you're not. Can we touch on that a little bit so that people understand the choice involved with survival and thriving and never giving up and so forth? Can we come back to that a little bit?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's probably 28 years now. 28 years, I have awakened to a waiting wheelchair. And every single day, I feel like, you know what, I'm in my power to choose. I tell people the only place a true disability can reside is in one's attitude, and that's a choice. And that's where anyone could disable themselves, or they can choose not to from an attitudinal standpoint, is that, and there hasn't been a day in 28 years in which I either haven't gotten in that wheelchair, or for whatever reason I can't be in that wheelchair for the day and having to navigate life in some other way, is that I'm going to find my way out of that bed and get going, because I realize all too much that showing up for life by just getting going is half the battle. Again, that doesn't guarantee that it's going to be successful. It doesn't mean it's going to be we say two things every day here at my house. To my children, Elizabeth, we say, try your best and have fun. And I know it sounds very simple. See, the mind wants to complicate life. The heart only wants to simplify it. So try your best and have fun. Imagine if you awaken every day and you say, no matter what the day has in store, no matter how awesome or how challenging it might actually be, I'm going to try my absolute best. And in the process, because guess what? This is part of the energy and this is part of the variety and why we love life, is that you got to make it fun in some way. You got to make it fun. So you go through the course of the day trying your best, having fun, and then right as your head hits the pillow before you go to bed, you ask yourself, did I try my absolute best? And if you did, great. If you didn't, don't beat up on yourself. Just say to yourself, hey, you know what? What were my excuses today and why? And just say, tomorrow's a new day. And did I have fun? And hopefully the answer is going to be yes. But if you try your best and have fun every day, I can't promise you is that you're going to succeed all the time. I can't promise you you're going to win, be productive all the time. But I can promise you this, and I will guarantee you this, is that within yourself you will feel successful, you will feel happy, and you will feel like a winner. And I have to tell you that there is no better feeling in the world.
Yeah. I love that. Try your best and have fun. Absolutely. You know what I don't love so much? I'm going to tell you, I'm not, you said a word, and I hate this word, but I don't like this word very much. I don't like the word disabled very much. I kind of like enabled and overcoming a little bit better than disabled. Disabled has a negative connotation to it, and it's the last thing you are.
Oh, I know. A lot of times, I remember it was about 3 years ago, somebody asked me, I was at a very important forum, I was on a panel, and somebody said, Mr. Chesney, what do you prefer to be called? We have physically challenged, we have disabled, we have handicaps, and all, he had a list of about 10 or 12 and crippled. I said, you know what I prefer to be called more than anything? Scott. And all of a sudden there was like silence in the entire audience and everything. And then all of a sudden I just left. I said, listen, I know there's a political correctness out there. And I know people say, you know, a person first, a person with a disability. And I want to be respectful of that. And usually that's the way I go. But I can't. The moment somebody says something to me, whether it's related to my disability or anything in life, in which all of a sudden like a red flag goes up or something like that, you know, Elizabeth, I could easily fire back at that person, or I could say, guess what? They're pushing my buttons. There's something within me that's unresolved. I have attracted this person into my life to sprinkle a little salt in that wound, to experience enough pain in my life where I'm going to make a change. That's what it's all about. Now, again, not easy, but anyone who's pushing my buttons, whether it be my wife, my wonderful wife, whether it be my children, whether it be a business colleague, whether it be anyone.
Or someone who doesn't even know better or anything, you know, innocent. Might be just totally innocent, too. You know, just trying to be nice to you and polite and respectful and things like that. And it can still press that button. And, but, you know, just I love the way you just explained that. Before we go, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about all these foundations that you're involved with, and then we'll go.
Absolutely. Well, what's wonderful is that I am not speaking every moment of the day, and I'm not coaching every moment of the day, nor do I want to. So there, I used to complement my work with consulting work, but I was approached by these amazing individuals who had many years' experience on Wall Street, who said, Scott, we'd love for you to head up Raise Hope Foundation. And I said, tell me about it. So we train, we mentor, and we place people with disabilities and veterans for rewarding careers in financial services. I said, wow. I've spoken to many audiences in financial services and so forth, and I would love it. So I have the opportunity to be president of this foundation now, in which we're doing a lot of fantastic work. And I get to, not only do we have the Center for Financial Training, who's providing the actual training, the best trainers in the world who are doing the financial services career training, is that I told them when I came on board, listen, I want to do work-life balance training, because the majority of people with disabilities have never worked a part-time or a full-time job and manage their disability most effectively. So I said, I want to combine it with this. And we're just rocking and rolling now. We have a huge fundraiser on October 17th down here in New Jersey at the Villa in Mountain Lakes. Joe Piscopo, it's an evening with Joe Piscopo. We're expecting a sellout crowd. So would love for people to come to that. But you know what I also will tell you is that I am proud and privileged to be an ambassador for the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation, as well as Kessler Foundation. So these two organizations who are doing so much to help people with their quality of life and to help people also with more effective treatments and ultimately cures. I mean, that's today's care, tomorrow's cure is the motto of the Reeve Foundation. And then you have Kessler Foundation, who is trying to help people with disabilities get back to work. They're so focused on employment issues because, and this is where it works hand in hand with the with Raise Hope Foundation, is that it's one of the largest minority segments of our population, and there is a huge segment of those with disabilities who are still unemployed, but yet through technological advances and accessibility and accommodations, is that a level playing field has been created. And knowing full well that, guess what, there are people, they've done studies on this, Elizabeth, in which people with disabilities, and we're generalizing here now, that we're like loyal dogs. You give us an opportunity to work a part-time or full-time job, we're going to think like this is a second chance on life. We've been given an opportunity, and there is an amazing retention, there's amazing loyalty factors that there's no other segment of the population can compare to.
Yeah, that's just showing somebody love who, you know, it's
absolutely
love and care. One more question. Sorry, you got one more.
I'm here forever.
I've had a long time.
I thought we were going to talk 4 hours.
I have 6 pages of notes already. I'm like writing everything you say down. It's fun. Really inspirational. Thank you so much for this. And my final question is, what do you do on a daily basis to keep yourself healthy, and do you personally work toward a goal of trying to walk again?
Excellent. Well, great questions. Great questions. I have a great routine. I'm one of those people who doesn't necessarily have to leave the home, even though I do spend a lot of time in hotel rooms and traveling and other places, that I'm very disciplined, and this is what I thank for, so thankful for, and being an athlete before I was paralyzed and also now, is that discipline to do as much as I can physically to prepare my body for the day, to prepare myself. What I've realized, though, in my journey is that while my life was so much about movement and still is so much about movement, I'm realizing that everything in life needs to have a perfect blend of its polar opposite. So what's the opposite of movement? It's stillness. I realized through meditation and yoga is that, you know, there's a time for stillness and also a time for silence, which have been so useful and productive in my life. So I try to discipline myself with a schedule. I am committed to walking again. I feel like I'm doing everything in my power to prepare my body for healing, which is emotionally and also mentally, and also for curing, which is the physical transformation. I have my ear to the pulse of research going on all over the world, and I'm ready. I'm ready to get back on my feet. I know it would make a life a lot easier for myself, for my family, and allow me to do things, but there's something that I want more when it comes to paralysis right now. I have so many extended brothers and sisters, Elizabeth, who don't have the use of their hands, who don't have the use of their arms, and it's something I take for granted. I am totally independent because of my hands and my arms, and allows me to travel around the world to do things that I love. I have dear friends who rely on people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to do something as simple as bring a sip of water to someone's lips when they're thirsty. I can't imagine that. I never hope that I have to experience that. I want those individuals to have those cures, to have those most effective treatments, so they can, at the very least, experience the same type of independence that I have right now. And with any other illness or disability, independence so one can function on his or her own. Again, always having support from others around us, whether we have a disability or not, but wanting people to have that independence, that's my biggest mission in life. That's what I want for everyone in this world.
Awesome. You know, I was, my father's a stroke survivor and a kidney cancer survivor as well. He had a stroke in 2004, and in 2005 he spent a very significant amount of time in Sister Kenny facility in Minneapolis, and that is a rehab center, and it's for you know, all sorts of injuries and medical, you know, everything. And the walls, I don't know if you've ever, have you ever heard of it?
I have not, no.
You might want to Google it sometime, or if you ever get a chance and you're in Minneapolis, take a visit. And when you're if you get that opportunity to visit, stroll through the walls of the rehab facility.
What's the name of it again?
Sister Kenny, K-E-N-N-Y.
I have heard of that. I'm sorry. I've been to Courage Center, which I know.
Okay.
I have heard of Sister Kenny.
Yep. The walls of this facility, and my dad was very ill, and my mom and I would walk the halls in the middle of the night for, you know, gathering inspiration and things like this. One of the things that we gathered inspiration from was all the art in the hallways. They have a fantastic and amazing and incredible art collection that decorates the walls of this facility, and it is people painting by their mouth, people painting blind, people painting with their foot, people painting.
Wow.
It's absolutely the most fascinating thing I've ever seen in my life, because I'm a person who has the use of all four limbs and can't draw a stick figure even. And when you see the amazing, like, courage and never give up and just the I'm doing this anyway. And I'm not talking, like, bad art. I'm talking amazing art. Like, it could be
wow.
an art museum kind of thing. And so each thing is beautifully framed, and then in the bottom there's like a gold plaque that says painted by blah, 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 when they were in the facility and or how they're associated with the facility and then how they painted or drew or whatever. It's absolutely breathtaking. In a good
way. That's inspirational.
Yeah. I mean, just amazing. And it gave us that, like, never give up feel, like, okay, we're going to get through this. Look at all these things that all these people achieved. Amazing. Amazing.
Wow.
Amazing.
Wow. So, well, that's a place I'm going to have to visit next time I'm in Minnesota.
I hope you do.
Once a year.
They would love you. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go because I know I've taken up so much of your time, but I want to, oh my gosh, I want to just say thank you so much to you for being here. You have just completely, I am certain when people listen to this and listen to it back and play it over and over again, there are so many takeaways and so much information in this call, and you are just absolutely wonderful. I'm so excited to hear what you do next.
Well, thank you, and I look forward to following your journey. I'm glad this has been what's connected us. So thank you for doing all your work. Thank you for the opportunity today.
Yeah, thank you. All right. With that said, we're going to go watch football, right?
I'm just kidding. Are you ready for some football?
All right.
Super Bowl champion.
That's awesome.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
All right, take care. Lots of love, and thank you all for listening. And we'll be back on Thursday the 12th with a guest named Sarah and her beautiful book. And we've got a lot going on in September. September 17th, we have the Alzheimer's Speaks, and we have Eric Pearl on the 18th and Stephanie Tippy on the 19th, and just lots of great guests coming up. So, Scott, I thank you very much for being with us. Please visit Scott on Twitter. It's Scott Chesney on Twitter, and then his website is also scottchesney.com. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Scott. Have a beautiful day, and thank you all for listening. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.